Schneeweiß und Rosenrot, Rock'n'Roll, Heavy Metal, Kultur und das Leben. Der fetzige Podcast mit Cora und Shake.
Hello, this is Cora speaking. Today, not in my nice and beautiful Bavarian accent, but in English for a change. The reason why is I have Australian musicians staying at my place right at the moment, and I thought it might be a cool thing to have an interview with her. I'm talking about Sorka Wilcox from the band Artwork. You guys are playing heavy metal, right? Welcome, Sorka.
Thanks so much, Cora. Thanks for having me, and thanks so much for letting us stay at your place. Yeah, we've just kind of taken over your house for a few days. But yeah, it's really good to be here.
Nice. How, what do you think about Germany? Have you ever been to Germany before?
I'd only been to Germany once before. I've got some friends that live in Berlin, and I have a friend from Marburg as well. So first time I came to Germany was 2020, mm-hmm. and it was New Year's Day. No, it was New Year's. And I'd just been in Ireland because all my family live there. And I came to Germany and I was just so used to being in Ireland, which is like my second home. And when I first came to Germany, I was like, wow, people here are big, like big and tall and strong. I was so used to being in Ireland where everyone's a bit smaller, you know. Mm. And we went to Marburg and hung out there with our friend Dave. And then we headed over to Berlin and stayed with our friends Koz and Magda. And yeah, that's all the time I've spent in Germany prior to this trip. Mm. So yeah, but I do really enjoy it here. There's obviously a lot of major cultural differences. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, the way people talk and, you know, people here speak in a very direct kind of tone,
yeah,
which is very different to Australia and particularly different to Ireland as well. Everything in Irish is very suggestive, mm-hmm. you know. And here you have to be a bit more kind of straight up,
yeah.
which feels very strange. And yeah, a lot of big differences here, but you know, it's so beautiful. Like,
yeah.
you know, we're in Regensburg and, you know, cruising around the town and it's just like so much history,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's wild. I mean, obviously we have history going back like 60 to 80,000 years in Australia with the First Nations people. But, you know, here with the buildings and this is like a Roman city and
yeah.
stuff, it's quite incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Only it's like kind of cold right at the moment. Right?
Yeah. It was like prior to us coming here, you know, it was Australian summer and for about 3 days, it was about 35 degrees. It was like 35 degrees the day we left. And I remember speaking to our tour manager, Dustin, on the phone like the day before we left. And we were like, what's the weather like over there? And he goes, oh, yeah, it's okay. It's like 8 degrees. It's really nice. And we're like, Jesus, 8 degrees.
Mm.
That's so cold.
Yeah. You guys have like 35 or something, right?
It was 35 degrees. Yeah. And a bit of a heat wave and no rain and very dry. And the Australian sun is quite unique because during our summer, we're closer to the sun technically than anyone else. And
yeah.
the light in Australia, as you know, because I'm a photographer as well, and the light is very unique. It's incredibly bright. We
mm-hmm.
have like the brightest sun. So the sunlight is very, very harsh. And then when I come here, I can't get over how different the light is. Even the shadows, I'm like, the shadows are not dark enough. Like
yeah.
it's very, very different.
It's a bit more like it's not as bright.
100%.
Does it add something to your mood in a way, or?
Well, I guess also it's winter sun at the moment, which is a lot gentler. Mood wise, I think it's just that Australia is such a harsh climate. I mean, obviously down in Melbourne, it's not as intense as other parts of the country because it's, you know, so massive,
mm-hmm.
but the light here is significantly different.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot more gentle and you get very different tonal gradation
mm-hmm.
where in Australia it's like extreme highlights and extreme
yeah.
shadows. Yeah, that was like as soon as we kind of got off the plane and we're driving here, I was just like, the light's so different. But one thing is that I'm like, it looks like the paintings.
Oh.
You know? And So I find it interesting thinking about like representation of the landscape in art and stuff, because obviously when Australia was colonized, you had these Europeans coming over and trying to paint the landscape, mm-hmm. but they weren't doing it right. They weren't painting the Australian light. Mm-hmm. They were painting the Australian landscape using European light, and it looks wrong. And it wasn't until there was kind of more of a wave of painters, particularly with what's called the Heidelberg School, mm-hmm. and those painters were painting the Australian light, and they look very, very different. So, yeah, I'm very interested in that. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Thank you for that input, by the way.
I guess when you just come with an artist's perspective and, you know, not only do the buildings look incredibly different, but the landscape and particularly the light, I guess as a photographer, it's just like mm-hmm. a major thing that you notice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've never been to Australia. I definitely want to go there someday. Yeah, you even made it more attractive to me right now.
Yeah, well, when you go there, you need some sunnies.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring them. No,
you need some sunnies and some sunscreen.
Yeah, sweet. So, Sorka, just to give you some context, because I didn't even tell you about what the whole thing is about. I just said, let's do an interview. And you said, oh, yeah, let's do it. My co-host, Shake, and I, we've been doing a podcast about female musicians for some weeks now. We are not actually really stressing the fact that we are talking about female musician. It's more like a podcast from us to other people. We just talk about our lives. We thought at some point it might be a cool idea, because we've been knowing each other for some time, to make some kind of podcast and to speak about interesting people in the scene or in music history. So our first episode was Sister Rosetta Tharpe. I don't know if you...
Yeah, that dude, course. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And the second episode was about the woman and the guitar in general. We just discussed the whole thing about women and guitars, basically.
That's great. Mm-hmm. One thing with... I find that really interesting, and I'm always complaining about this to my guy friend. So all my friends know that I don't like Stratocasters. It's not the sound, right? Like, I don't care if other people play them, but as a woman, I cannot play a Strat because of that horn at the top. Mm-hmm. It digs into my tits.
That's so funny that
I can't play that guitar. And everyone's like, oh, Sorka hates Strats. I was like, yeah, but I hate them because it's not designed for a woman's body, you know? Yeah. Like, it's so annoying that even, like, instruments we play need to be able to cater to mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funny you say that, because we talked about that fact, too. We were discussing 100%. It. I personally, I play a Strat, but I don't have as much breasts, whatever you call it. So it's not, I might have not the same kind of problem.
Yeah.
But still, I see the problem, definitely. And you play, normal you play?
I'm playing in Aardvark. I'm playing a Jackson RRJ.
Yeah.
From 1990. So it's kind of like your Randy Rhodes, but a bit asymmetrical. Mm-hmm. And then in another band, I play a Les Paul, because mm-hmm. I got to avoid that horn. It just stabs me in the tit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I really find them uncomfortable.
Do you think that back then when they started building those kind of guitars, I mean, Stratocaster is the guitar, basically, right? It's the guitar form. Do you think that in a way women weren't considered when they built them?
100%. Mm. They would not think about women playing these things. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, like, if you look at the, what's her name? That chick? I keep wanting to say St. Vitus. Say Vincent, mm-hmm. right? The guitar that she designed does not have a horn where the tit is.
Okay.
If you look at the shape of that guitar, it's like, yeah, I can play that, because it doesn't have that section there.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you need a woman to do this.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I thought that was really interesting when I saw that come out, you know, years ago now.
Yeah. Oh, that's super interesting. You have to show me a picture or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cool shape. Like, it's a bit pointy and stuff, but it, you know, that section there where where your breasts are, I suppose it's, you know, it's open, you know, you're not getting stabbed by it.
Yeah. I personally play checks and king bees. I do play different kinds of guitars, but I noticed that I feel very free with my checks and king bees because you don't have that thing in front of you.
Yeah.
Basically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally see that. Cool that we just dug into that kind of topic already. I've got so many other questions about that. But the first question I actually have is, I heard you're not only a great guitar player, but also a doctor.
Yeah, I have a PhD. Yeah.
What kind of PhD do you have?
It's in creative arts.
Nice.
So for my PhD, I basically made a new experimental creative practice methodology that uses prompts from quantum physics.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's like a methodology that can be applied to kind of any type of creative arts. So like visual photography, performance, whatever, even music. And yeah, it's a methodology that kind of teaches you how to think of things as a field of material. And within that field, you look for what we call potential, where ideas kind of work, right? Because I work as a lecturer at Deakin University in Melbourne, and I've been there, this is my 10th year lecturing there.
Really? Wow.
And I teach photography and creative arts and sometimes visual arts as well. And I'm really interested in like the creative process, particularly in an experimental kind of genre. So quite different to fine arts. But in that process, I'm interested in like the commencement of a project and how do you know the next step? Like, how do you know when things are working the way you want them to? And it's something that I talk about with my students a lot. And so this methodology that I made takes, like I said, prompts from quantum physics. There's like a number of theories and experiments that it uses. And it's basically looking for this idea of potential.
Yeah.
So it's basically like when waves within the field interact and create something new. Yeah, it's quite in depth.
So is it like just for me as somebody who's never got into that field? I have a degree in literature.
Yeah.
But that kind of stuff sounds super new to me.
Yeah.
Is it like the way you just explained it to me, would it be some kind of way to make your creativity more effective in a way?
That's kind of the idea, because you're chasing what is working and it's kind of a way to identify when things are working.
Uh-huh.
And there's various ways to think about how to engage with the field of material and how to interrogate it in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it would also help creative people to kind of like more stick to their projects and know where they have to correct themselves, or
yeah, it's kind of knowing about like where to go.
Yeah,
what's the next step going to be?
Because
I guess like often with my students, sometimes you know that they may be like first or second year and they're not that experienced, and they might just kind of go with the first idea that comes to them. And the biggest piece of feedback we give for maybe projects that are not quite hitting the mark is that you need to further develop this idea.
Yeah.
And a big part of developing the idea is spending time with the work. This is like a really significant thing that comes from emergence theory. And so the methodology that I made goes into all that. And I did have the opportunity to teach it to a group of people in a series of workshops. So a couple of my cousins, Aaron and Aoife, they run an artist studio in Melbourne called Pink Ember Studio. It's like a queer artist space. And they run workshops there, and they got me in to teach this methodology to a group. And it went really well. And I still run into some of these artists, and they're like, yeah, I've been using the methodology. It totally works. And it is a particular way of thinking, as all these methodologies are. But yeah, it's really, I guess it kind of takes a bit of a practice-led research line, which is what we use quite a lot in like experimental stuff, where, you know, you never know what the outcome is going to be. Like if you start at the beginning and you're like, oh, my artwork is going to be X, well, then it's not research because you know where it's going.
Yeah.
So the idea is to kind of push yourself and the work into newer areas that you didn't expect, to break creative habits,
yeah,
and find something new. So it's kind of all about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super interesting, because when I run into an idea and find myself totally getting involved into that idea, and I really want to, you know, realize it, and I want to have an, of course I want to have a result at some point, but I found myself so many times being totally motivated, super, super, super motivated, and then at some point something happened in my life and then I stopped doing it. And it's like, sometimes it would be super, super helpful for myself to have some kind of, like you say, some kind of manual to stay creative in a way.
Yeah, I did kind of at one point during my PhD make like a manual.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of that material kind of got integrated into the major thesis.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's quite large. Yeah. It takes about 4 hours for me to read this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just so many different things to consider, like what we call like hidden variables within this process, and like what are you going to pick up on and what are you going to abandon? Yeah, it's quite in depth. But yeah, because I did what's called an exegesis, where for your PhD, you do have a thesis, but then you also have like an exhibition,
mm-hmm,
of work as well. And the exhibition kind of, it was more like an installation artwork that consisted of like some, there were like these four video projectors and like four speakers set up, because I integrate a lot of music and soundscapes, nice, playing guitar into my work. And it's kind of a shame that I can't just put people into that and be like, this is what it is and explain it. But on the night when opened, having people in that space and being able to explain how the process worked in that space was really good.
Nice.
But I can't just carry that around with me.
Yeah, sure, sure thing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Does your academic work somehow inflict on your work with artwork?
No.
No?
They're totally separate things. I don't really like... I kind of feel like in my artistic career, I have like my academic artwork and, mm-hmm, then I have like my music stuff on the side. And I mean, to be fair, I do use a lot of music stuff in my academic, mm-hmm, work as well, and performance as part of that. But yeah, like the metal thing or like other bands that I play in doesn't really come into it. It's kind of, mm-hmm, like a separate world.
Yeah.
But even like getting ready for this tour, you know, all my colleagues were like so excited for me. I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous to go on this tour and blah, blah, blah. And some of them were like, oh, can we like show the students like the Aardvark Instagram and stuff in class? I'm like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. Yeah, because I'm not exactly wearing like a big leather jacket to, yeah, work and stuff, yeah, you know, sure, like, sure, it's kind of like just a different part of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens quite often that academics are also playing in metal. Like,
yeah.
My bandmate from Atlantean Codex, Manuel, he's professor for ethnology in,
really,
he works in Munich right now, and he's writing those really, really amazing lyrics that our fans can recite and know by heart. It's like, it's really crazy.
Wow. Yeah. I do know a few metalheads with PhDs, mm-hmm, like friends of mine, and yeah, it seems to be a bit of a thing. There was a Journal of Heavy Metal Studies. I don't think it's running anymore, but I did. I was doing some research into particularly the space that women have made for themselves in metal, like particularly the fashions, yeah, and stuff like that, and looking at some kind of like key texts from the field and everything, going back to like, I think the first one, kind of like the Dina Weinstein book, is from like 1990, mm-hmm, or something. But yeah, then I found out that there was a whole journal of heavy metal studies. I was like, what the fuck? and it, I don't think it's running anymore, but there was some really interesting academia in there about,
yeah,
metal stuff,
yeah,
which was really bizarre. I wish it was, I don't think it's still running. I wish it was, because I would love to write something for it.
Yeah.
But I think I've even seen that there were like conferences, mm-hmm, and stuff.
There are.
Yeah.
There are.
Which, you know, they're not in Australia, obviously. But, like, that just blew my mind.
Maybe you come here at some point in your career, in your academic career as a lecturer. I
could do that.
I would go to your
I could do that, totally, yeah.
Just do a European tour on your own.
That's the kind of thing that my colleagues do. They're like, oh, like, one of my colleagues right now, I think she's, like, doing a residency in, like, Iceland or something for her photography work. Yeah,
nice.
It's very cool.
Nice. Yeah, talking about women and metal music, there's obviously still a big gender gap, right? And what do you think? What are the reasons why there's still so much more men than women in rock and metal?
I seriously think that part of it is women making their own space for it. And although I do have to say that, like, the music scene in Melbourne is very different to what I've seen. I mean, to be fair, I've only been to Heavy Metal Thunder, you know, that was on the weekend. But, you know, I was one of two women playing over 2 days, which would not happen in Melbourne.
And what kind of instrument did they play?
She was the singer.
Okay. And you were
in
the
Tower.
Guitarist.
Yeah. Tower, they were, like, amazing.
Uh-huh.
And the singer was incredible. I didn't actually really get to chat to her, but she was the only other chick on the lineup.
Mm.
Which in Melbourne would not happen.
Mm.
Like, you would need to have, I don't really want to say it's like a PC kind of vibe, but it's more of an inclusivity kind of thing. And you would need to have way more women on the lineup.
So it's like a must, basically. It's like demanded from.
Yeah. And there's so many chicks playing in the Melbourne music scene. Like,
that's cool.
The metal scene within Melbourne, maybe not as much, but in the music scene in general, which is quite varied, there's a lot of women. But in the metal scene, I seriously think it's women trying to make their own space for themselves. And I think sometimes we kind of break the rules of, like, what dudes have set up in the past. And I think maybe there's a bit of a clash, like, oh, that's not metal, or you're not allowed to do that.
Mm.
And you get that from some of the kind of elitist types.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know exactly what I mean. But, I mean, you know, even playing that festival, there was maybe, like, one creepy guy, but, like, generally people didn't seem to have a problem with me playing there. Like, I didn't really get anyone giving me any, like, sexist remarks or, like, any kind of stuff that would maybe make me feel a bit uncomfortable.
Mm.
There was, like, one guy, but that was it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just women doing their own version, you know, and again, maybe breaking some of those kind of traditional aspects that the guys have set up.
Yeah.
I think it's that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I come from here, obviously, so I would definitely be super interested in just have a look into your scene, because it sounds in the Melbourne scene, because it sounds really, really nice to me.
Yeah. Like, it is also pushed by venues. Like, they will be like, you need a diverse lineup. So whether that is, like, people of color, or, like, trans and queer communities, or, like, non-binary, or, like, women or whatever, venues in Melbourne are really pushing for inclusivity and trying to break that kind of traditional boys club vibe.
Yeah. Now you name it. It is a boys club.
It's a boys club. It totally is.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been for a long time. But, you know, I've been playing in bands. I think probably started playing in this band Dowser probably in, like, 2015-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And back then it was not as inclusive. And I would get comments from guys like, oh, I've never seen a girl play guitar like that before. Or, like, girls shouldn't play Les Pauls. I'm like, get fucked. So I actually had a really shit experience one time. I was playing a Gretsch at the time, and I was getting it set up for this band Dowser. So, like, C standard and, like, super heavy strings, like 12s to 56s.
Yeah.
And I went into this guitar shop in South Melbourne. They're called Deluxe. And I went in there to get this setup done and got treated like an absolute piece of shit. And the guy on the counter was like, yeah, what strings you want?
Mm.
And I was like, those ones there, those green Ernie balls, the 12 to 56s. And he was like, you want those strings? Nah, they're man strings.
No.
And I was like, what? He's like, no, they're fucking man strings. Mm. Like, you're a chick, you can't play them. And I'm like, what? And then he calls out to his mate that's working there. His name is like Gus. And he's like, "Oh, Gus, this chick wants man strings." And he comes out. He's like, "No, they're fucking for men." And I was like, "What?" Like,
holy shit.
And because I was there on my own, I was just like, "What are you talking about?" Anyway, so like they did this setup. They totally fucked up. It was terrible. And I was like, "Give me my fucking money back." And then like, you know, the next day, like the owner of this place calls me up. He's like, "Oh, I heard that like you weren't satisfied." I'm like, "Dude, not only was I not fucking satisfied, but like, you know, sorry to swear, but like those cunts in there like absolutely totally treated me like shit."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that place can go fuck themselves.
Yeah, I work in a guitar shop.
And yeah.
And I think I'm one of the very rare girls who work in a guitar shop.
100%. I don't think I've ever seen... No.
I've seen one.
No, I've
in
not...
In Berlin one day.
I've seen a chick work in the sheet music section of a guitar shop, but I've never seen a chick like on the floor in a guitar shop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I had some years ago, actually, but I had those kind of situations when a customer came and he asked for... I'm not sure if that's the right English word, but a condensator, like a thing you would put in the in an amp. It's like a little mini. I have no idea what a condensator is in English, but you guys know probably. And then that person, man, came to me and asked for that condensator, and I said, "Sorry, I have to ask my boss. I don't know where they are. It's just little tiny technical, like very tiny things, and I just didn't know where they are." And the customer said to me, "Well, do you, as a girl, do you not know what a condensator is?"
Like,
and I didn't even know what to say at that moment. I'm a very peaceful person, so I'm not looking for conflict, and that's in some moments when I think back to that moment, I think I should have said this and that, and but it's you get that kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah,
it's
to be honest, Melbourne is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a lot better than it was 10 years ago, and there's, you know, way more women playing on lineups with me and that I see generally playing. And so I think the guys are getting used to it. And obviously when I say the guys, I mean only the assholes. You know, most guys are fine.
Mm.
But I did used to play in this band called La Bronco with my friend Laura. And we were very like, the band was like very kind of sludgy, kind of just two-piece. I would play my Les Paul through like a bass cab and she would like smash around the drums. And we wanted to like be girly and have fun with it. And so we would like wear these tiny little like sparkly dresses and stuff, like little mini dresses and big boots. And, you know, we weren't trying to be like sexy. We were just trying to have fun with it. And I swear, like so many gigs, these guys would come up to us and be like, "I didn't think you girls were going to sound like that."
Yeah.
And it's like, what does that even mean?
You can actually play guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, I do get really annoyed when guys are like, "How long have you been playing guitar for?" I'm like, dude, you're not asking any other guys in the band how long they've been playing. You're asking me because I'm a girl.
Mm.
Oh,
yeah.
I think that's just kind of like the reality of what we have to deal with.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I would love to get angry and punch all of these guys in the face, you know, but then I'm going to make a bad reputation for myself. I'm not going to get gigs booked and be like, "She's violent," blah, blah, blah. But I'm just standing up for myself.
Mm-hmm. Like Joan Jett.
100%. I love Joan Jett. What a legend. Yeah. So, you know, you do have to kind of, I don't know if it's, you know, a chick thing as well. Like if, you know, if a guy does say something super rude to me, I do feel like I'm forced to kind of laugh it off because if I get angry, he's going to get angry and then he might hit me. And I'm worried about that.
Either that or it's just, you know, talking shit about you. Exactly. You don't want to jeopardize your band.
Just 100%. You know? Yeah. Because they'll be like, "Oh, that chick that plays in that band's a real bitch, don't book them."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Shake and I, we were last time we were discussing a text called The Woman and the Electric Guitar, and it's written by a by an English author called Mavis Beaton. And she played, I think in the 70s, she played in a punk band called The Mistakes. And I think she's got some very valid points. She wrote a text back then in 1997, actually. Pretty old text.
So. Yeah.
And then Shake and I were discussing it for like 2.5 hours, actually. We got like very, very in-depth discussions going on. And I think it's kind of interesting to dig in that kind of field with you a bit more, because it's super interesting to me. Like, we already kind of talked about some of those things already, but she's making some very interesting statements. Like, for example, she says the status woman seems to obscure the status of musician. What do you think about that?
Yeah. All right. So there's this band in Melbourne who I really enjoy called Hot Machine.
Mm-hmm.
They're like this great, like, you know, all female band, and they're like a great like rock and roll party band. Their like live show is so great. Like, they're so into it, really energetic, pulling all these moves, great outfits, like full, like going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fantastic. And, you know, videos like get put online and stuff, and it's all dudes just mm-hmm. like making sexist comments. And you go to their shows and there's all these like middle-aged men just like gawking at them, just like mouths open, just staring at them.
Or holding up the phone.
Taking photos and stuff and like really sexualizing them.
Mm.
And it sucks because they're a great band. They totally rule. They've been doing great shows. We've played with them a few times. They're really nice. They're really great musos. And this whole them being women gets like, it's totally, people are obscuring the fact that they're great musos
mm-hmm.
and they're playing great songs and, you know, the band rules. And you see it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's right there. It's really disappointing.
Yeah.
I haven't actually, like, had an opportunity to chat with any of those girls about, like, how they feel about this, because I don't really want to bring it up, you know. Mm. But, you know, from what I see and, like, I've chatted with my friends about it, and I feel like they're just being treated shitly.
Mm. It's like like some exotic kind of thing.
100%.
You know?
Yeah.
Mm. Would you consider, if you'd be asked, would you consider playing in an all-girl band, or is it like the way have it right now?
I would totally play in an all-girl band. Yeah. Like, I used to play, it was only two-piece, but me and my friend Laura played in this chick band, and like, we would just like, our kind of whole motto for this band was like, we're just gonna be chicks to have fun.
Mm, nice.
And that was it, and that's where like the outfits and all that kind of stuff came into it. Yeah, I would totally play an all girl band. 100%.
Yeah
I feel like this might sound really stupid, but the vibe of playing in an all girl band versus playing in a band with guys is that it's kind of like, it's as if playing with the guys gives you authority.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know the vibe I mean?
Yeah, I know what
I really felt that going from an ill girl band to playing with guys is kind of like, oh, she must be all right.
Oh.
Because the guys accept her.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
That's super interesting, because it's, with me, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
I've been playing with guys for 10 years.
Yeah.
Now I'm starting to play with girls.
Yeah.
I've never considered it that way. It just kind of, you know, evolved with my problem, or it wasn't a problem, I was just doing my thing, but there were no girls around who I could do music with.
Yeah,
right. I just wanted to do music, and the only people around who wanted to do music too were guys.
Yeah.
And another thing which I'm still kind of ambivalent about is when it comes to all female bands, I sometimes have the feeling that the gender is playing a bigger role than the actual music.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
In what way would you say?
In that way that there is not, like, there's not the same amount of all female bands
yeah.
than all men bands.
Yeah.
So for some reason you would set up mostly, or in, I think in a lot of ways, it's probably an economic factor that you would say, okay, let's form a band only with girls because it makes money, because it gives you fame in a way.
Yeah.
Makes it interesting and exotic, you know?
I've never really thought about it that way.
And it's like, my personal standpoint is I like when a band comes together, no matter what your gender is, and it's only about music.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really thought about it that way because I kind of, like, most of my friends are guys. You know, I've only got, like, a few kind of very close female friends. I don't know why. Like, I'm just not really a girly girl.
Likewise.
You know, like, I don't know how many sisters. I've only got a brother. I've always kind of just hung around the guys. But I have had, like, girls ask me, like, hey, do you want to form an all-girl band? And I just haven't been available or whatever. I would totally do it. But, yeah, I mean, like, I guess I hadn't considered this idea that you were talking about where it's, like, more of an exotic thing. Yeah.
I don't get me wrong. I absolutely love seeing more and more all-girl bands coming up because it adds something more natural to it.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. The more all female bands you see, the more of a normality it also gets.
Yeah. You know? I do honestly feel like women are very supportive of each other.
Yeah.
Like that's what the scene is kind of like in Melbourne. Like you plan a lineup and there's some chick, I'm like, dude, I want to chat to her. Like, and you know, like you're playing and the chicks are up the front and then like afterwards, like, oh my God, I loved your playing. And like they will come up and talk to you and they're all really nice and like really supportive. And being like, oh, it's so good to see a girl up there and blah, blah, blah. Like chicks love it.
For me, it's the nicest thing when a chick comes to the merch table after a show.
And says,
I absolutely loved it. And I play guitar too. And I would, you're kind of inspiring to me. And I want to do more.
That's sweet.
That's the best thing that can ever happen to
you. I also love their outfits. I'm so interested in like what the chicks wear, particularly in the metal scene, because I was kind of researching this for a while and like how they kind of just make their own stuff, like stuff is customized, whatever, and they're just dressing differently to the guys. Yeah, I'm very excited about like how they present themselves in the scene.
Yeah, cool. There's another statement that author Mavis Beaton gives, which made Shake and Me discuss a lot. It's, she says that often male bands deliberately exclude women to underline their masculinity. What do you think about that?
I don't have any guy friends that would do that. So they're not my friends.
See?
Yeah, it's like I don't seriously like, I think I just hang around with nice guys that would not do that shit.
Yeah. I agree. Like I'm very, very lucky that I'm doing music with people who are not like that.
Yeah.
But I think that's, going back to that question I asked you before, I think that's one of the reasons why there's traditionally so many male bands.
Yeah.
Is like back then, bands were formed to kind of escape the establishment or the family structure in a way, you know?
Yeah.
To break out of this.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting because, like, coming from an Irish perspective, like, you know, my parents are both from Ireland. You know, even my brother was born there. And growing up in an Irish household, you know, there's a very set role for women. And it's kind of, there's kind of like this cultural saying of being a lovely girl. She's a lovely girl, right? That's how they say it. And you are, as a woman, expected to be a lovely girl. And that means you have to be petite and polite and you have to kind of put everyone ahead of yourself and you have to love children. And, you know, you are basically the possession of your father until, you know, this is not obviously exclusive to Ireland, but you are the possession of your father until you get married and then you're the possession of your husband.
Yeah.
And it's your job to look after your husband. So that's kind of what I come from. But I do feel that my mom kind of broke out of that a little bit. But
it's, you know, there was not an opportunity for women to explore what they wanted to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know, it kind of annoys me when there's like these biopics of like some woman that broke out in her field and became a scientist or whatever.
Yeah.
And people are like, why weren't more women doing that? It's like, because they literally could not. It was not an opportunity for them. So coming forward to today, like I feel like in only a couple of generations, women playing in bands has been this massive leap.
Yeah.
And being, you know, accepted doing that is huge.
Yeah. There is, I have a feeling that there is some kind of development going on. That text we discuss is from 97, but still there are so many things which are still very, very concerning to me in a way. It's like, and you still get those comments. You still are, it's not like a real concern, but you still feel it in a way. It's not a normality still. It's still something special. And that is something which I'm still thinking about is, do I like it that it's special that you're a woman and play guitar, or is it something that kind of, that I don't want to have anymore?
Yeah, I don't want it to be special.
Mm.
I just want to be one of the guys.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want it to be a thing that there's a girl in the band.
Yeah.
You know, like, no, don't single me out. Like, I'm just like everyone else.
Oh, that's that band with that girl.
Yeah, man, I hate that. Yeah. Like, no, just...
Mm-hmm.
I don't want any attention. Like, yeah, it's really annoying.
And when I joined Atlantean Codex, I was mid 20. I learned all those songs, and I know that the heavy metal audience is very, especially the German heavy metal audience is very picky. They sometimes would throw their critique right into your face.
I've heard people do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would not get that in Australia. Oh my God. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
People would never, if people had a critique, it might come out when they were really drunk, but generally there would be no critiquing.
Mm-hmm.
But Danny, our bass player, who's also my partner, has toured Europe a couple of times in his old band, Child. And he was like, sometimes, you know, particularly Germans would come and be like, yeah, I'm not going to try to do the accent. They would be like, yeah, you know, the second album is good, but the first album is better. Like,
yeah,
just straight up
just
say
normal.
That.
That's normal.
Yeah, man.
You get that all the time.
I did actually get one chick at Heavy Metal Thunder. We were like in the line for the toilets or something, of course, where all the chicks congregated and you get these comments. And she was like, oh, yeah, you were pulling some really good moves, but I feel like your bandmates ignored you. And I was like, what? She was like, yeah, you were like really good. And you were like trying to like kind of like come up to them and stuff, but they ignored you. I'm like, no, they didn't.
That's the German way of starting a conversation.
Man,
sometimes.
That's brutal. That is so brutal.
No small talk. Just
yeah, oh my God. I'm Irish. I need the small talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I wanted to say is that I prepared my songs and I knew, okay, I'm going to play in front of thousands of those crazy, very, very sophisticated metalheads.
Wow.
And yeah, I was very nervous, but also because I put myself under a lot of pressure, because not only am I the new one in Atlantean Codex back then, but also I'm a woman. I told that myself. They're gonna look at me twice, because I was personally feeling they were just waiting for me to fuck up.
Yeah, you okay? All right, 100%. So, in all of my years of playing guitar, I've always felt that for women, we need to be like really good,
even better.
Yeah. Do you feel this?
Absolutely.
It sounds like you do. Like, I remember even like playing guitar in high school, I was, you know, me and my female friends, we had our band and we'd just be playing covers in music class or whatever. And the guys would sit there while we were playing and they would imitate us, being like, oh, what you're playing is so easy. And then they would get up and play Ramones or something. It's like, dude, three power chords, go fuck yourself. So like, we'd be playing like Queens of the Stone Age or something with a bunch of licks and weird time stuff or whatever. And they would make fun of us and be like, oh, you know, you're not very good. And it's like, dude, we're actually way better than you. But I seriously have always felt, and I'm really interested to hear, you know, kind of make that point as well, that if you're going to be a woman in a band, you have to be like really good. You can't just be okay. You've got to be like really good.
You have to be top
because notch. There is so much extra criticism on you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah.
And every person or every woman I talk to says the same.
Yeah.
It's like I put so much pressure on me because I have a feeling I have to compete with all the males.
Yeah.
And it's not only that I have to be the same level like them, I have to be better to be equal.
Yes.
And it's,
but then it kind of backfires. And then I do admit, I'll be watching some band with guys playing. I'm like, man, I'm so much better than you. Like, but I'll be like, look at the confidence you're bringing. You think you're the best and you're fucking not. Like, yeah, I sometimes see these guys playing. I'm like, where are you getting this confidence from? What you're doing is pedestrian, you know? Mm. Like, I'm not saying what I'm playing is the hardest stuff ever. It's absolutely not. Mm. But it's like, sometimes these guys just get up there and they play like three power chords and they think they're like, the king of rock, and I'm like, you are not.
Yeah. But do you have the, like, I personally speaking, I have to practice a lot.
Oh my god,
I have to practice hours and hours and hours. My partner Dustin is sometimes complaining that I'm spending my evenings in the office and playing my shit.
Wow, you sound way more disciplined than I am. I do a lot of practice, particularly because I'm not like a metalhead. I like listen to a lot of different genres of music, and I do love metal 100%. Mm. Like Thin Lizzy is my favorite band of all time. I have like one tattoo and it's a Thin Lizzy tattoo. Mm. Like, you know.
Nice.
But I would not say that I'm a metalhead, but in me joining Aardvark, I kind of joined Aardvark because I wanted to learn how to play heavy metal style. Because I played another band with Danny, the Aardvark bass player, and a friend of ours called Adam called Dowser, which is very like doom drone noisy kind of stuff. And then I was playing Le Bronco with my friend Laura, which was very sludgy. But I'd not learned heavy metal style. So in joining Aardvark, I had to kind of like learn this new style. And Edward, our like lead guitarist and singer, has kind of been like doing little sessions with me at the studio, like teaching me techniques and stuff.
Mm.
And it was weird because, you know, I've been playing guitar for, I don't know, over 20 years. And then having to change techniques and not anchor my hand in a certain way and like use different picks and playing different strings and everything. Like, it's actually been a massive learning curve for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been doing a lot of practice to get the stuff and get it really tight and learn more. But yeah, it's a lot of work. And there is, again, that thing in the back of the head where it's like, I can't be the shit chick in the band because I am going to get that extra criticism. Yeah. I need to be good.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I totally get that. Yeah. But like you just said, I've got the chance to play in so many different styles. And each time, like I come from thrash metal, I joined an epic doom metal band. I'm just playing with Wolverine, who are doing punk rock and roll. And each time I got to know a new style, it broadened my horizon too.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah.
Yeah, I've also started playing in another band in Melbourne called Fly, and I've been playing bass in this band. And I haven't played bass in a long time. Mm-hmm. But their bass player was leaving and I was friends with these guys and I'm like, Sorka, do you want to join? I'm like, yeah, I love the band. And the band is very like straight up rock and roll. It's very kind of Motorhead-ish.
Yeah.
And these guys are so much fun. And shifting from like guitar mode to then into bass mode has been like a huge learning curve as well. Just playing a different role. Like suddenly I'm in the rhythm section, the drummer and I have to lock in and like, you know, like the first jam I had with them, like the drummer Carter, he's like, no, you need to be looking at me. Because I was looking at Wyatt, the guitarist and the singer, because I guess I'm just so used to that with Aardvark. Mm. And the drummer's like, no, you need to log in with me. Yeah.
Cool. How was your musical upbringing? Like what made you play guitar?
For my 6th birthday, my parents got me a keyboard and a piano lesson. So I started learning piano at 6. And I played piano till I was 12. And when I was 12, I started playing flute. And I played flute for a couple of years at school. And then when I was 14, I was like, I want to play guitar. Mm-hmm. Because I was getting annoyed with piano and flute where, like, you hit a key and that's kind of all that happens. Mm. I know that in flute you can bend notes and do weird textural stuff, but we weren't being taught that. Mm. You know, I didn't know that even existed.
It's just for understanding, is flute that thing here?
Here. Yeah.
Like with the querflöte. Because there's a recorder, is this?
Like, oh, there's that. Yeah, we did that in primary school as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The fingering is basically the same. You just turn it to the side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the big metal one.
Yeah, got you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I found it annoying that you couldn't bend notes, really. Mm-hmm. You couldn't add effects. I mean, obviously, I know that you can now. Like, particularly, I do really like noise music and experimental stuff and people doing hectic stuff in that space. But as a teenager learning at school, I did not know that that existed. And I guess I'd kind of been playing guitar a little bit at home. Like, my dad always had this really horrible Washburn acoustic guitar around the house. And I think the first thing he taught me to play was, like, Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd.
Nice.
I remember doing that when I was probably around, like, 10 or something. Obviously, it was really big for me and I was, like, trying to do it. But when I was 14, I really got into electric guitar. And I don't really remember the exact sequence of events, but basically my parents got this, like, DVD and it was, like, it was called From a Whisper to a Scream, and it was a documentary series on the history of Irish music.
Mm.
And there was a section on Thin Lizzy. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, holy shit. And just, you know, became totally in love with this band. Mm. And, you know, like Brian Robertson with, like, the black and, like, black Les Paul with the white scratch plan. I was like, I want one of them. So, you know, got this really cheap Les Paul knockoff for like $100 or something.
Mm. Cool.
And yeah, that's when I really got into guitar. But then I didn't really start getting lessons until I was maybe like 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. But I would just like download tabs off the internet and then just learn various songs.
And I did the same.
Yeah, I think that's how everyone starts, isn't it? And then, like, you know, I would just like listen to Thin Lizzy albums and just like learn the lead lines or the riffs or whatever. Yeah. I would never learn like the whole song. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, I always found it really annoying having to learn songs. I just wanted to do my own thing.
Mm.
And that's how I really got into electric guitar.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So it was a decision made by yourself that you want to play electric guitar because you saw that one video.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Oh, well, I was just going to say also, like, I remember watching, like, you know, my parents love like music DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, my dad loves like Bob Dylan and they love like Neil Young. And I remember we were watching some like music DVDs and there was like Chrissie Hynde and even like Joni Mitchell and stuff. And they would be like, so, okay, you know, look at this woman doing this thing. And I think seeing them was really inspiring and being like, oh, there's this chick playing this Telecaster or whatever. I think that also helped.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. It's interesting that you said you started playing flute in the beginning, because what I've learned from Mavis Beaton's text is that flute is one of the instruments which is traditionally related to femininity in a way.
Fluttering the lines and like the high melodies and stuff.
Yeah, and just, you know, the positioning and like you look like a fairy in a way when you play.
You can use it to summon fairies. Wow, I've never heard that.
Mm.
But when I think back to playing in, like, you know, the school band and stuff, it was only chicks playing flute.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. Wow, I never thought of that.
I only know that guy from, oh my God, that's embarrassing.
Jethro Tull.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, dude.
Jethro Tull. That's the only guy I know who plays flute.
I know another guy, his name is Adam Halliwell, and he plays in this band called Mod Life, which are very kind of jazz fusion-ish, I guess.
Yeah.
They're from Melbourne. They've become very popular. They've been doing some Euro tours. And Adam is an incredible instrumentalist, and he, like, absolutely shreds on, like, jazz guitar. He does some weird stuff, but he plays flute as well.
Yeah.
And again, he does weird stuff with it. But yeah, he's like the only guy that I've met that plays flute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that when you stand on the stage and do your typical stage acting, would you say it's like That's a tough question because Shake and I didn't come to a really conclusion either. But would you say like that your stage acting is like kind of imitating masculinity, or is it the way you feel at that moment?
I don't want to try to imitate masculinity. I do want to bring my own thing to it.
Mm.
But I do feel very forced having to move around a lot. It's something that I've been trying to work on, actually. But yeah, I don't want to feel like I'm imitating a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to feel like I'm doing my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one thing that I find really annoying watching some male musicians is people trying to act tough all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, can you just not? Like, there's something about this whole, like, I'm so tough. I'm like, go fuck yourself. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just so over it. I see it a lot in Melbourne, just guys trying to be tough.
Mm.
All the time. And I'm like, stop it. Like, I'm definitely not trying to give that vibe.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be tough. It's like, that's not my vibe.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to like have fun with it.
I think it really depends on the music too.
Yeah.
Like I've been playing thrash metal basically half of my life. And I would say personally, I would have probably taken over some masculine moves, you know, standing like in a power stand or just, you know, acting very male. I was sometimes people came after the show came to me saying, oh, you're a chick.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
But it's interesting in a way because I didn't feel like imitating either. It was just feeling very majestic at that moment.
Yeah.
You know? And that's something we were still making up our mind about, is like the traditional male positions.
Yeah.
And like the positions, the typical positions you would have as a female, they are just socially trained too.
Yes. Know?
That's the other thing.
Yeah. I've never tried to do a power stance.
Mm.
That's like a real dude thing.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of like guys on the train when they sit down, they spread their legs really far. And I'm like, stop it. Yeah, no, power stance is not something that I would be doing.
Mm.
No, that seems too bro, too dude. I would not do that. I think also because particularly on stage, I'm the smallest one up there, like height-wise, like mm-hmm. I'm way shorter than the other guys. I'm wearing these big heels to try and look taller. But I feel like whenever I do put on, you know, my stage outfit and like these boots and stuff, I do feel like it's pretty feminine,
mm-hmm.
you know? So like, I don't think I'm really trying to look like a guy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Mavis Payton is making one statement. She says, male fans buy a guitar, female fans buy a poster. What do you think about that?
Male fans buy a guitar.
Yeah, female fans buy a poster.
I don't know that many women that play guitar.
Mm.
But I know a lot of guys that play guitar. Some of them are just like bedroom players. You know, they get lots of gear, but they don't really do much with it. I don't really know any chicks that do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, maybe they're... I don't want to say there is something to that. Well, okay, I think it's changing,
mm-hmm.
right? So... Again, when I'm back in Melbourne and I go to gigs and stuff and I'm seeing chicks on every lineup, I think maybe this idea that the woman would not buy a guitar is changing, particularly with younger generations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when I do go to these gigs in Melbourne and I see chicks playing, they're younger than me. They're like in their 20s, whereas I'm like 37. So I think that text is from 97.
Yeah, exactly.
I think perhaps it may have been true then, but we're talking maybe two generations later.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's changing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's referring to that fact back then that women more or less were put into the role of a fan at some point in their teenage lives, you know? Fans, male fans who admired a band would start practicing guitar themselves to you know, live up to their idols,
mm-hmm.
and females would kind of develop into somebody who could mate basically with that idol.
I do find that interesting, particularly, you know, if you talk to people and you ask them, when did you start playing guitar? They're normally going to say when they were a teenager, mm-hmm. right? But I do feel as a woman that there, I mean, maybe not for me and my generation, but definitely in past generations, there were less opportunities for women to explore what they wanted to do, even when they were younger in the house, because it was expected that you were helping with the house.
Yeah.
You were helping maybe raise your younger siblings. You were helping in the kitchen, cleaning the house, whereas your brother could do whatever he wanted, right? And, I mean, my parents were not so much like that. Like, but, you know, my brother being a guy definitely did have more freedom than I did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my parents were, I mean, you know, I would help clean the house, but my brother wouldn't, you know. Mm-hmm. So I seriously think that it even comes back to the home environment and how much time women are allowed to spend on themselves.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Again, I don't know what it's like with later generations, and it wasn't really that bad for me. My parents were very encouraging of me doing music, 100%. They would be telling me to go to practice. Mm. But I know for women older than me, they didn't have that opportunity.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And talking about the time aspect, I think lots of time is being consumed by trying to look good.
Oh, yeah, you're expected to do that stuff.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's like you would be busy with doing your makeup, making your shopping, and then what time is left for really, you know, staying at home and practice guitar?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I seriously think that time availability is a big thing. But I never hear anyone talking about this, mm-hmm. you know, but I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And when a girl comes to me after the show and says, I absolutely love it and I want to start playing guitar again because I've played guitar, but at some point I stopped playing guitar.
Yeah.
It's probably most of the cases that they just stopped because they were busy doing household chores and looking good.
Yes. Yeah.
It's sad.
Man, one of my friend Laura, like, she's gorgeous, right? She puts a lot of effort into being gorgeous. I am just like way too low maintenance to do that. But I kind of didn't realize this was a thing with hot chicks.
Beautiful.
No. But I'm not like a hot chick. But like hanging out with the hot chicks, they spend so much time on this stuff. And I'm like, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, it's kind of, it really, like, hanging out with chicks who are like incredibly hot, kind of, I was like, you didn't just wake up looking like that. You spent a lot of time on this. And I'm like, I cannot be bothered.
Yeah. How do you say that in English? I think it's like I matured very late.
Yeah.
Like I was a kid still when I was 12 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
While my other peers would already have their first
date. Yeah, me too. Also, I only had a brother.
Yeah.
I didn't have a sister. And like my mom is not overly girly, like, you know, she never paints her nails. She's got fingers like mine. Like, you know, there was no one to emulate in that sense.
Mm.
And like, you know, my dad didn't have any sisters, you know, so like, I think I was just a little tomboy. And like, my brother would just teach me how to play sport and like wrestle. And like, there was no being a girl.
That's what I think about myself a lot too, is like I kind of grew up like a tomboy.
Yeah, I was a total tomboy.
And that's for like a good part of that whole thing is that both of us made us stick to the guitar. You know?
Yeah, like, I guess so.
It's crazy. It's a crazy realization that might have been one of the facts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I haven't brushed my hair today. No, I'm not wearing any makeup. Like, yeah.
All right, Sorka, thank you so much.
Thanks so much. It's been really fun.
Yeah,
hanging out in your kitchen.
yeah, little kitchen talk. Awesome. You're on tour now.
Yeah,
you just played one show in Czech Republic.
Yeah,
and what is ahead of you?
Oh my God. I don't have the tour schedule in front of me, but the next gig is on the 20th of March in Linz.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me the venue. Yeah, I think if you wanted the tour schedule, definitely have a look at the Aardvark Instagram page. I think it's just aardvark.band. And yeah, so everyone's like, all my colleagues like, what countries that you going to? And I'm like, okay, let me remember. So it's like, so Germany, Czech Republic. What do you say, Czechia?
We say Czech Republic.
Okay, all right. I've had people correct me on that. Austria, Switzerland, Belgium, France, Greece, Netherlands. I think that's all the places
nice,
we're going.
Nice.
And it's quite huge for us because it took us like 25 hours to fly here and we're quite excited.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, get in the van, the tour van tomorrow. And then, yeah, it's really going to kick off.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm super happy for you. It all worked out. And
thanks.
I hope you have a great tour, but I'm sure you're going to.
Yeah, I really hope so. This is my first tour. Like, we've only done a couple of different cities in Australia. So, yeah, it's going to be a really great time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
for this.
Cara.
And next time, I think I'm going to talk a bit more German again. We'll see. Alrighty. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.